United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe. Welcome to the Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain. My guest is Fran Quigley, law professor and director of the Health and Human Rights Clinic at Indiana University. His most recent book is Prescription for the People, an activist guide to making medicine affordable for all. And he is the co-founder of People of Faith for Access to Medicines. Fran, welcome to the Seminary Explores.
Katie, thank you for having me.
So, well, let's start off with a couple of myths to debunk about the way the pharmaceutical industry works in the States. Is that okay?
That's wonderful. So, you want to suggest them, or you'd like me to suggest the myths that I hear, and you could tell me whether you've heard others?
How about if you start off?
I think myth number one is that we pay these enormously high prices for prescription medicines in order to fund groundbreaking research. There is groundbreaking research going on. There needs to be groundbreaking research going on. But the price of medicines really has no relation to that, partly because so much of the groundbreaking research at the most critical stage, the early basic science stage, is already funded by taxpayers, already funded by the United States government, specifically the National Institutes of Health, and also partly because the pharmaceutical industry prices their medicines not as a tool to raise funds for research, but to gain as much profit as they possibly can. And because those medicines are often protected by monopolies or near monopolies, then that medicine price can be enormously high. And the industry, private industry, actually spends more of their dollars on marketing than they do on research. And when they do spend money on research, it's oftentimes on duplicative drugs, drugs that are, are designed to get a part of a lucrative market and not necessarily to advance health. Again, all understandable behavior by a for-profit company or for-profit industry. But the idea that we pay these high prices in order to fund research has been debunked time and time again.
And yet we hear it in a sort of penetrating way in the background, and also in a very effective way, right, through marketing. And
absolutely. I do a fair amount of traveling in and out of Washington, D.C., and I don't know if you have or any of your listeners have, but in the in Reagan Airport at the security line where we spend too much time, right, there is, I want to say, it's probably a 30-foot by 10-foot screen that is constantly showing pharmaceutical industry messaging, and it's all about wonderful research that we've conducted. And they do conduct some research. They do conduct clinical trials, but the fact that the prices are connected to the cost of that research, that is a myth.
Could you also say something about the role that patents play? Because I think this is something that a lot of us really misunderstand, how this relates to pharmaceutical pricing.
Right. Patents are just simply monopolies. Patents are legally government-granted monopolies. And for pharmaceuticals, usually the baseline is a 20-year patent on a medicine. The reason that they're a very poor match for the pharmaceutical challenge, the medicines challenge we have, are a couple. One is historically, patents have been off limits or at least really strictly limited for medicines. It's just not the way most cultures and most countries have done business for generation after generation after generation until really very recently. And I ask folks sometimes to ask if they know anybody who didn't get the polio vaccine because it cost too much. And of course they didn't, because Jonas Salk refused to take a patent on it. Dr. Frederick Banting famously on insulin and the other two discoverers sold their patents for $1 each, saying, you know, this doesn't belong to us, it belongs to the world. Medicines as a public good is really the way most cultures, including the U.S. culture and the U.S. law, treated medicines until very recently. But now we grant patents to medicines that were discovered, again, with U.S. taxpayer dollars usually, and the compound, when it's promising, is given to a private company where they take a 20-year monopoly. And that monopoly is what allows medicine to be priced at these exorbitant prices. There's a muscular dystrophy medicine now, I believe, that costs $750,000. Cancer medicines average over $100,000 a year per person per treatment. And again, usually those medicines can be manufactured at a tiny fraction of that cost. When there is generic competition, when medicines, quote unquote, mm-hmm. go off patent, mm-hmm. the medicine's price drops 90%. It's a totally monopoly inflated price, and patents allow it. The other myth about patents is that, well, we do need to grant these monopolies, otherwise no one will have incentive to develop these medicines. And again, history has shown that to be untrue time and time again. If it's a life-saving medicine, there's plenty of support. There's plenty of researchers who want to do that work. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of government taxpayer dollars, and always have been, and philanthropic dollars to support that research because it's so important. If it's important research, we'll find a funding for it. We'll find folks who really want to devote their lives to that. We don't need to grant windfall profit monopolies in order to get that done. So that's another myth to answer mm-hmm. your earlier question.
And there's something really interesting about the AIDS antiretroviral medicines as a historic example of a different model, right?
Right.
Could you say something about that? And I know that one of your earlier books was also connected to this.
Right. Well, it really, in many respects, followed for a while the same script we see today, is mm-hmm. that the antiretrovirals, their use in combating HIV/AIDS was discovered in taxpayer-funded research. And what we have done since 1980 in the United States, called the Bayh-Dole Act of 1980, is what we've allowed federally funded research, the fruits of it, to be handed to a private company, a monopoly given. So with antiretrovirals, that happened, mm-hmm. even when they were shown to be so effective at treating AIDS, and the price went up. The companies had this monopoly on a life-saving drug, and the price went up, and the price was maybe it cost a dollar or two a day to make the medicines. They were charging $1,000 a month. And in the U.S. and in Western Europe and in the richer parts of the world, because of activism, folks were paying for it. Governments were paying for it. Insurance mm-hmm. was paying for it. In sub-Saharan Africa and the poorer places of the world, that was way too expensive. And so people were dying, not by the thousands, but the hundreds of thousands, by the millions, untreated of HIV/AIDS, even though the medicine was there to treat them that would have saved their lives, but it cost too much. And what makes that an inspiring story to come out of that horror scene is that activists, including patient activists, really led by patient activists, pushed back and said, This is absolutely immoral. This is inhuman. This is a violation of basic human rights, and we need to push back. And the pharmaceutical company and the activists had an enormous multi-year fight mm-hmm. that ultimately the activists won. And when there was enough public pressure on the pharmaceutical companies and on the U.S. government and other governments that were supporting those companies and their patent rights, the prices went tumbling down. Generics became available, and antiretroviral prices dropped 98%. And the medicine became available at a dollar a day, and there are now 19 million people globally on antiretrovirals, and that means 19 million lives were saved because of the activism that brought the price down, because those people were dying, but for the pushback from the communities, and in particularly the communities of patients, people who were affected by HIV. So that's an amazing, inspiring success story on its own, but it's also a really important object lesson for us today when we've got mm-hmm. the same problem with cancer medicine, same problem with insulin, same problem with mental health medicines and vaccines, etc. That can be done. We know it can be done because it's been done before.
And South Africa had a particularly interesting role in this, did it not?
Yeah, so the epicenter of the patient activism in sub-Saharan Africa and the poorer places of the world came from South Africa. And there's really a very inspiring story that comes back to a funeral in 1998 of a young man with AIDS who died. And these family and friends were there, and they'd been to too many funerals because that was the time where nobody was getting treatment because mm-hmm. they couldn't afford it. But the folks had been, including the young man who died, he'd been an anti-apartheid activist, he'd been a gay rights activist, and his friends had too. And at that funeral, somebody stood up and said, can't we try to do something? And a few weeks later, they had a small protest. That protest grew. The demonstrations grew. Ended up being litigation. Ended up being an international campaign, which is what ultimately led to the price going down. But the South African community was really a leader in that, and partly because they had this legacy of anti-apartheid activism that these were veteran activists, and they were ready to push back. And then Nelson Mandela did the right thing, and so it ended up being the pharmaceutical industry suing Nelson Mandela, which wasn't a good optic for them, and helped build the global support for affordable medicine. So, yeah, that was, South Africa was really a place where heroes did their work in this.
It's an incredible model.
Yeah, it is. And it does show, as the pharmaceutical industry is enormously powerful, enormously well-funded, and sees this as an existential threat because they do understand that their profit margin and their business model are artificially inflated and causing suffering. And so they're worried about it. And so it's easy to look at them and say, oh, my goodness, we can't ever beat Big Pharma. Well, they were beaten. They were beaten at the turn of the century by some of the poorest and sickest people and ostracized people in the world who engaged in just traditional social movement activism and pushed back.
Could you say something about the initiative that you're involved with, People of Faith for Access to Medicines? Can you describe how that came about and what your goals are?
Right. People of Faith for Access to Medicines, hopefully the name is relatively self-explanatory because it doesn't roll off the tongue, but hopefully it serves the utilitarian purpose. We are trying to link a really strong, secular, expert access to medicines community. So Public Citizen does really great work. Doctors Without Borders does really great work. Treatment Action Campaign coming out of South Africa still does really great work, all on access to medicines. But that community, frankly, has not traditionally been really strong in the grassroots, especially in the U.S. And the faith communities, of course, are. And the faith communities also are to a congregation, almost, and definitely to a denomination, embrace the idea of healthcare for all. It's the core of every sacred scripture. It's the core of our mandates as people of faith. But it's, access to medicines hasn't necessarily been top on the list of priorities for activism and justice from the pulpit or in the church basement. So what we're trying to do is link the two movements, and so far it's been really successful because this is such a strong moral question. This is, you know, we can talk, my day job, as you said, as a law professor, we can talk about different treaties and statutes and why that should lead to access to medicines. But for people of faith, it's a and frankly, folks who have come from moral traditions that aren't necessarily from traditional faith traditions either.
Right.
This is a moral question. It is immoral for people to die by the millions, which they are every year, because they can't afford a medicine that can be manufactured for pennies a dose. That what's going on now is untenable. That's what won the HIV/AIDS treatment fight, and that's what we think will win this one. But the faith community has a real role to play because the faith community can and we think should have a real strong moral voice saying it doesn't matter what the patent rules are. It doesn't matter what the profit margin is for this particular corporation. It is inhuman. It is against our mandates as living persons on this planet to allow people to die just because medicines are priced at an artificially high rate.
And it's really the sense of proportion is something that has just gone out of control, because we're not talking about profits. We're talking about exponential and exponentially high, artificially elevated prices.
Right. By some measures, the pharmaceutical industry is one of the most profitable industries in modern capitalist history. And when you think about it, that's not surprising because there's really, it's hard to come up with another industry that has this bulletproof business model of one, you have a monopoly on the product. Number two, the government's done the research. Number three, the government is the main purchaser at the back end, so you've got a guaranteed customer. And number four, your product is life essential. You know, it's not like people are going to walk away and say, oh, I'm not going to buy a new iPhone. Well, I'm not going to get my insulin this month, or I'm not going to take the chemo. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to get my mental health meds or get my kid vaccinated. Those are absolutely essential purchases. If people have, you know, if a medicine costs $120,000 a year and somebody has $121,000, they'll pay for the medicine. And so that's an amazing business model. So it's not surprising that the companies have been essentially just printing money for the past couple of decades. And that's as a result of the laws and the system we created where we're handing over these patent monopolies. So circle back to your original question. So, yeah, it's not a, it's not a single-digit profit margin. On average, it's 20-plus percent. CEO salaries of $47 million a year or $27 million a year, $16 million I saw the other day for, I think, Eli Lilly, CEO. They can't, they can't make money fast enough, and you can see why with the system that we have granted them.
Mm-hmm. You're here at Moravian College in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, having done a presentation with filmmaker Vince Mondillo. Would you mind saying just one thing about the collaboration and the presentation you did today with around activism and this was a conference for writers. But you had an interesting combination between a sort of lawyer activist and filmmaker activist.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I thought it was such an amazing conversation. Just one, I'm such a big fan of Vince Mondillo and his team, and so they've done two different films. One of which is on healthcare. One is called Fix It, which is about the overall healthcare system problem in the U.S. and advocates for single payer healthcare. Fix It, I believe, is available for free online. Mm-hmm. The one we screened here was Big Pharma, which I think is not quite, and obviously focuses on the pharmaceutical industry. I really love them, even though I got to say, Katie, they made me feel inadequate and that, okay, I wrote this entire book, I took years doing it, in 1 hour he kind of covered everything in a very colorful, interesting way. It's like, why did I bother with all that? But it was terrific, and the conversation today was really exciting. Of course, I come from a advocate background and traditional writing, and Vince obviously is a filmmaker, but around the table, and you were there too, but we had folks who were do video logs, we had a blogger, we had folks who have done visual media or as visual arts as a result of, and they're part of their activism. We had a lot of people coming at this in a lot of different ways, but with the bottom line it being that one of the ways we tackle injustice is by telling stories about it and by lifting off the covers and saying, here's what's going on. And here's what we need to do to fix it. So I really was excited by the conversation today.
Well, thank you so much for your time. You've been listening to The Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain. My guest has been lawyer and activist Fran Quigley. Learn more about People of Faith for Access to Medicines at pfamrx.org. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Katie.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.